Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the podcast. It is time for the Daily Dive for March 8th, 2024. And we start off with Casey Anthony. As you know, I've written a lot of blinds about her because I have somebody who's kind of obsessed with making sure that Casey Anthony never gets a reality show, never gets anything like that. But she wants to become a reality star. And she's pitching a show. And the show is basically in each episode, Casey will go about her day, working, socializing, dating. As you know, there has been a time where she's been basically a yachter. People who want to sleep with a murderer. She'll share her thoughts and opinions. We'll give an intimate look into her world. And she's going to be an executive producer as well as starring in it. There would be people in her life who would also be in it. Do you really want to admit that you're hanging around with a child killer? One network executive says, I think it's a losing bet. But what's really that interesting about her life? The backlash would be huge. Now, who's doing it? I mean, is it the same woman who helped her do the Peacock documentary, Tamara Simmons? She's at, where is she at? Live Always Productions, I think. It could be somebody else. I mean, Bravo definitely has turned it down. I can't imagine that they would want it. I just don't know who would want a Casey Anthony reality show. But speaking of reality shows, if you listen to the radio show today, I talked about Love is Blind. And now Love is Blind is in the news. Same person I kind of talked about earlier, Chelsea Blackwell and Jimmy Presnell. They got engaged on the latest season, but then they split during the finale. But they were recorded out to lunch in Florida, laughing together and everything. And the person who posted and made the joke about Megan Fox was at my work tonight because Chelsea compared herself to Megan Fox. I'm not sure that's the comparison you want to make. She says that she gets asked or says that people think that she looks like Megan Fox. She doesn't look anything like Megan Fox. But it is interesting that Chelsea and Jimmy are hanging out. Doesn't mean they're going to get back together again. Now, I got a tip today that I turned into a blind. But I only used like a little bit of it in the blind. But I thought it was kind of interesting. It's about Akon, and I don't remember the last time I talked about Akon. Maybe I did because one of his Ponzi schemes or whatever. But the tips that Akon lives in Atlanta, is a local a-hole for many reasons. Akon has had a bodyguard for a few years that was in the Crips, an MMA fighter, a criminal. The guy recently got out of jail and swore to never go back. And Akon called him to come over, and the guy brought one of his MMA coaches for support. And the reason was because Akon demanded that this guy fly to Vegas with him the next day, and it was a Friday. But the guy didn't have time to get it approved by his probation officer and be put back in jail for violating his parole. He did not want to go back to jail. The bodyguard's name is Dexter Carthon. And Akon stated, too bad, pushed the guy to come. The guy refused, and Akon fired him. Because the guy didn't want to go to jail? Wasn't Akon who's going to go to jail? That's awful. It really is. And also, you know, it's a Friday, and I always feel like the news that everybody wants to kind of sneak by is on a Friday. You know, we had it last week, and now this week we have UFOs. And in a report submitted to Congress today, the U.S. government concluded there was no evidence that the U.S. government had interacted with aliens. The report was created by the All Domain Anomaly Research Office, AARO, at the request of Congress, found that most sightings of UFOs or unidentified anomalous phenomenon, UAP, were ordinary objects or explainable phenomenon. AARO found no empirical evidence for claims that the USG, U.S. government, and private companies have been reverse engineering extraterrestrial technology. The report also called allegations of reverse engineered extraterrestrial technology inaccurate. And they blame the inaccurate reports on U.S. government officials who viewed authentic U.S. government classified programs without proper knowledge of them and then mistakenly associated them with extraterrestrial activity. And some of the reports of UFOs were due to the rapidly expanding flight technology of the 1960s, which led some people to misidentify never-before-seen experimental technology as extraterrestrial. Okay, I'll agree with that one sentence. I think that in the 1960s, I mean, aviation and the things they were doing, missiles and all kinds of stuff and trying to shoot things down. I gotcha. All right. That one sentence I'm good with. The report took time to address the obvious skepticism from the public, saying a consistent theme in popular culture involves a particularly persistent narrative that the U.S. government, or a secret or secretive organization within it, recovered several off-world spacecraft and extraterrestrial biological remains, that it operates a program of programs to reverse engineer the recovered technology, and that it has conspired since the 1940s to keep this effort hidden from the United States Congress and the American public. Okay. This is what I got to say about any of this, and there's more of the report. My feeling is that the Harry Reid, the guy, the former senator from Nevada, you know, he has always said that he thought that there were, you know, UFOs, and he thinks that the government's hiding stuff. You know, a Democrat from Nevada, and just was really on the front page of like, yeah, I think there's something out there. But I think there was only so much that he could do as a senator, even as a very powerful senator. But it all comes down to this. Don't you think that whatever you think of Trump, that don't you think that he would have just, yeah, if there's something out there, that he would have released it all? I kind of feel like that. I just don't feel like he would be willing to keep that a secret, because it's just, you know, everybody wants to know. And so he'd be like, here you go. It just, that's the kind of thing. I also think that, again, with like Prince Harry, that he would say, here you go. The report said the proliferation of television programs, books, movies, and the vast amount of internet and social media content centered on UAP-related topics most likely has influenced the public conversation on this topic and reinforced these beliefs within some sections of the population. Also, with all the advent of social media, as it says, and TikToks, and everybody's got a camera, right? Think about how many cameras are in the world. However many billion people have a phone that can instantly take photos or videos. And how many Ring cameras and other security cameras and, you know, cameras in streets and in intersections and homes. Do you feel like one of them would have picked up something that's not super grainy, or is that what, something like that? Do I think that there's people out, you know, some other life form out there? Absolutely. I mean, this, you know, the galaxies and the solar system and everything, it's just, there's just so much space out there. And there's so many planets and other things, not necessarily in our, you know, in our solar system, but others, other galaxies. Yeah, I think for sure. But I also think that we would have known. And why did they only come in the 1940s and 50s and 60s? Major General Patrick Ryder, a Pentagon spokesman, said they approached the report with an open mind and no preconceived idea, but found no evidence to back up claims of secret programs, hidden alien technology, or anything else extraterrestrial. Now, do I think that they have secret programs? Absolutely. Do I think that they have anything that maybe came from another galaxy that they use or try to use, see if they can use it? Absolutely. But, you know, I would like to see just something. I just find it hard to believe that there's nothing out there. Like no photos or anything, just because everybody photographs everything. Now, one set of photos I would really like to see, or videos, is what I'm calling Weekend at Bernie's. Two Ohio women propped up a dead man in their car to withdraw hundreds of dollars from his bank account before dropping the corpse off at a hospital. Loreen B. Ferrallo, 55, and Karen Casbaum, 63, were accused of driving the body of Douglas Lehman, 80, to a bank drive-thru window in Ashtabula on Monday, according to the Star Beacon. The women, who were not related to Lehman, but lived with him in the city about 50 miles from Cleveland, removed the body from his home with the help of a third person. They propped him up in the passenger seat so that the teller could see him. They tried to withdraw money from his account, the police chief told the Star Beacon. The bank had allowed this previously, as long as they were accompanied by him. After withdrawing about $900, the women drove Lehman to Ashtabula County Medical Center, where they dropped off his corpse without identifying him or themselves. Police eventually located the pair, who identified Douglas and said he had died at his home. The two women, who have lengthy criminal records, were charged with theft and gross abuse of a corpse, both felonies. Ferralo has been convicted of reckless assault, possession of drug paraphernalia, criminal trespass, driving under the influence, theft, and attempted possession of drugs. Well, probably not doing a Weekend at Bernie's, but honestly, if she did something like Weekend at Bernie's, at least maybe people would like it or respond favorably. But the entire internet has decided that Camila Cabello's song, her new song, is the worst song that has ever existed in the history of songs. I don't think we need to go that far. But she's posting like these clips of the songs and everything like that. And there was a clip of her attending a Miami Heat game and hugging player Jimmy Butler. Alex Earl was there. And Jimmy Butler was wearing the title of Camila's new single, I Love It, on like a sweatshirt. It's just, it's a horrible song. Unlike, say, the Ariana Grande album, which is not bad, you guys. It's not bad. It's, I don't know if it's her best. It's definitely better than the last one. And it's got some bops on it. I love Heidi and Spencer. I do think that, speaking of Love is Blind, that they should be the hosts of Love is Blind. I think that they would do a much better job than Nick and Vanessa. But Heidi was on a podcast. Who was she on? She was on, I don't remember right this second. But she's on a podcast, and she said that she and Spencer were banned by E! In order to launch Kim Kardashian's career in reality show. And at first you're going, do you think that they were really banned? You know, were they banned in 2009 for being overexposed? And Keeping Up with the Kardashians started in 2007. And I kind of have to agree. And it's no, I don't know, there's no reason not to have banned them. Because if you think about it, back then, Ryan Seacrest was still hosting that E! Show every single day. And, you know, the E! Kind of highlight show, and it would show stars walking down Robertson, or, you know, paparazzi photos of them and things like that. And Heidi and Spencer were very good at being front and center. They were in our faces all the time. So if they show them on E!, even though they are, you know, like on MTV or something like that, right? So then it makes sense to ban them, because you're taking away viewers from your own show. And Ryan Seacrest was the executive producer of Keeping Up with the Kardashians. He wanted it to succeed. So, of course, he went to people at E! And said, can we stop talking about Heidi and Spencer? And so what E! Did was, they had this public poll back in 2009. And they said, like, if they do something newsworthy, we will put them on. But they said what we're looking at is more like avoiding stories about them walking down Robertson or going to dinner. It was just a question of overexposure and wondering how much of the news about them was truly news or contrived. And Heidi and Spencer knew how to play the game. Go out in public, call the paparazzi. There you go. There's your TV story. And back then, of course, tabloids were filled to the brim with pictures, and they needed to fill the space. And they knew how to do that. So last week, we got the scene from this movie that Elizabeth Hurley's in, the lesbian sex scene that her son directed, and we know how creepy that is. And I said, do I want to do a deep dive on Elizabeth Hurley? Can it be done? And I thought, you know, it might be able to be done for like an episode, and then maybe you could go off to Hugh Grant. I don't know, but I was just thinking about it. And then it popped in my head about Elizabeth Hurley and Tom Sizemore. And if you think about the people that Elizabeth Hurley has been with, the Tom Sizemore one was a little bit different. And Sizemore said in his book that he met and fell in love with Elizabeth Hurley on the set of Passenger 57. That's the Wesley Snipes a movie. It's a great movie. I actually really, really like it. But he said that he was instantly smitten by her stunningly flawless ivory skin, beautiful voice, and charming throaty laugh. And after Hurley performed a striptease for him in her hotel room, they began an affair that was only interrupted when Grant visited his girlfriend in Los Angeles. And Tom Sizemore had never heard of Hugh Grant. Four Weddings and a Funeral hadn't been released yet. And so he just assumed that he was some out-of-work British actor. But he also said that Elizabeth was very good in having two men in her life and would get him to remove his things from her apartment when she knew Grant was due to pay her a visit. He said, I really lost myself in Elizabeth Hurley. I never really got over her. When they finally split up, he cried, and Elizabeth told him to stop and suggested they walk her dog instead. One of the other things in his book was he revealed how he asked Brad Pitt if it was okay to go out with Juliette Lewis. And Brad Pitt said, is it okay? I'll drive you there. Now, the story that wasn't in his book about Elizabeth Hurley and that he recanted a day after he said it, I'm assuming under intense pressure, was he had told two friends, and which was captured on audio tape, played on radar, that then-President Clinton flew Elizabeth Hurley to the White House to sleep with her. And the story was everywhere, right? It was on Drudge Report. It was linked everywhere. It was the Globe, and radar had done a joint investigation with the Globe. They got a copy of the conversation from two of its participants and built the story out from there. And Sizemore said that he was going to put the story in his book, but that his publisher was dissuaded from doing so by Susan McDougall. So he was going to put it in there. And there was audio of him talking about it. Some of it, I'm not sure. Like, some of the quotes seem kind of crazy. But anyway, on the tape was, I think it was recorded in January of 2016. And Sizemore is telling these two guys about how he arranged Clinton and Hurley to be together. He said it all began during a 1998 White House screening of Saving Private Ryan. And Clinton pulls Sizemore aside from the crowd. Tom Hanks was there, Matt Damon, Ed Burns, Dennis Farina. And this was 4 years after Elizabeth Hurley had worn that Versace dress to the premiere of Four Weddings and a Funeral. And Sizemore claims that Clinton asked if he wanted to see the Lincoln bedroom, and after shaking his Secret Service detail, you know, the president, they walk in, and Clinton kind of says, did you go out with Elizabeth Hurley for 4 years? Do you still see her? Tom says, yeah, you know, we dated, but we're no longer together. And then the president asked for her phone number. And Tom Sizemore was a little bit hesitant to give out the phone numbers, but Clinton said, give it to me, you dumb mother effer. I'm the commander-in-chief of the United States of America. The buck stops here. Give me the damn number. Does that sound like a Clinton quote? I'm not sure. But Tom Sizemore gives him the number. And basically, then he says that Clinton was thinking about a cover story. And he tells Sizemore, I'm going to say I asked you about your uncle, Ted Sizemore, who played professional baseball. That's the lie. Don't forget it. And then while Sizemore's standing there, Clinton dials Elizabeth Hurley's phone number. Said, Elizabeth, this is your commander-in-chief. Well, probably not because she's British, but okay. And Elizabeth Hurley first thought it was a joke. And she kind of played coy, but the president wouldn't take no for an answer. And Clinton said, listen, Elizabeth, this is the president. I don't have any time for this shit. I'm keeping the world from nuclear war all the time. I'm sending a plane to pick you up. And then hours later, Elizabeth Hurley was at the White House. And Tom Sizemore said, while we're at the reception, I saw her, but then she disappeared through a door trailed by a Secret Service agent. And that Bill turned to Tom Sizemore and said, I owe you one. And Sizemore said on the tape, what do you think? She was there for 4 days. He effed her that night. And later, he asked Elizabeth Hurley, what was it like there? And asked, was Hillary a problem? She said, no, they sleep in different bedrooms. Well, like I said, the next day he recanted it, said he did say those things, but that he was under a lot of drugs and maybe he wasn't remembering correctly. Uh-huh. But this is the same Tom Sizemore who had the Tom Sizemore sex scandal, right? Where he locks himself in a hotel room with five hookers, a lot of drugs and booze, five video cameras, and a can of whipped cream. It is crazy. Absolutely crazy. And what's also crazy, if you think about with like Elizabeth Hurley, is Duncan Roy once wrote something when Elizabeth Hurley had been cheating on her husband Arun with Shane Warne. And this is what Duncan wrote back at the time. He said, I wanted to write a bunch of stuff about Elizabeth being a sex addict, but I wrote 1,000 words and then the computer crashed and it all vanished. I can't be bothered to write it again. I was reminiscing about the first time I met Elizabeth, and she was laying on the floor of her sitting room, her legs apart, and then he goes into more graphic detail. I wonder if she remembers telling me about her whipping club in L.A., how she loves to take a man in hand. I wonder if she dominates Shane. He looks like the sort of man who needs to be dominated, coerced, his power stripped from him by a woman, a good, strong woman like Elizabeth. And of course, we never mentioned the lesbian interlude. Know about that? I do. I hear that she was in San Lorenzo last week looking a bit worse for wear. Drunk? I wonder who's looking after the kid. The problem with Elizabeth is that she is a mere actress / celebrity when in fact she was born to be a high priestess or warrior princess, acolytes tugging at her skirt, gladiators handpicked from the forum to pleasure her. Poor Elizabeth, she's the straight equivalent of a gay power bottom. Wow, Duncan can say some stuff. And that's not all of that, what he had said that day, but that's the best part. But the whole Rune thing was really interesting with Shane Warne because Elizabeth had got busted with Shane Warne. And after the fact, she goes, not a great day. For the record, my husband, Arun, and I separated a few months ago. Our close family and friends were aware of this. And Warren at the same time responded to rumors on his blog and said, sadly and unfortunately, Simone and I split up a while ago. Our close friends and family were informed at that time. Okay. You guys, it's the same sentence. Then he said, it's a private matter, so we didn't make it public. We remain friends. We'll continue to be good parents. It is exactly the same sentence. And if Arun and, I mean, if Elizabeth and Shane had been, you know, separated, why did Elizabeth and Shane stay at his hotel room when it was literally a half a mile from her house? And the tabloids had published pictures of Elizabeth and Shane, like, you know, kissing and stuff. And one of the nights, she did it in front of Hugh Grant, like they all went to dinner together. And Hurley had spent two nights with Shane in his London hotel suite. And the thing that also didn't make sense about what Elizabeth Hurley said was that she had attended social events with Arun as recently as like 3 weeks earlier. And they happily posed together. Elizabeth was wearing her wedding ring. But that Elizabeth had fallen for Shane. And then there was this source, which was obviously Elizabeth, and it said, it's more than just a fling. Liz is really falling for Shane. Shane has been a real support through the tough time she's had splitting with Arun. They've grown very close, and there's an intimate bond between them. The only thing standing in their way is the geography. Shane is mesmerized by Liz. She's the first person he has felt so strongly about since his divorce. They have so much chemistry. Oh, not having chemistry is Lindsay Hubbard. And she went on Watch What Happens Live last night to talk about Carl Radke and seemed so incensed that Carl asked for the engagement ring back after he called up their engagement, like this 4-carat ring, because she said he demanded it back. And Andy looked shocked. Like, oh, why would he want it back? And asked, how did you feel about that? And she goes, there's the law, New York law, but then there's etiquette. Well, isn't the etiquette to give it back? But she explained that in New York, there's a law regarding engagement rings where it's considered a contingency gift that's contingent upon there being a wedding and a marriage. So when there isn't, the ring legally belongs to him. And she said, now I did take it off pretty much immediately and gave it to my jeweler for safekeeping. And she gave it back to him when he emailed me and demanded it back. And she also said that Radke still pays half the rent for their apartment, despite him moving out 6 months ago. And she said, yeah, we re-signed our lease a month before we broke up. So, I mean, listen, that's something that should have been thought through, and it wasn't, and that's not a me problem. And she wasn't going to try and figure out where she was going to live. She said, he's on the lease, like it's a legally binding contract where he owes half the rent. Do you think that they split the rent 50-50 when they're living there? I don't know. I do know that there's been a lot of talk about the soaps, because I was talking about the new show, The Gates, which I'm really excited about, because I think that anytime you can bring back stuff like that to daytime television, it's going to be better. And I saw everybody talking about, oh, I was a CBS person, all this. I was a CBS guy. Capital was by far my favorite because it was just 30 minutes, so it was easy peasy to get through. Did it advance very far? No. But I liked it because it was just 30 minutes. But I feel like CBS people were the outcasts. Right? You have obviously you had this huge ABC kind of crowd. And I feel like the ABC crowd was a little bit older, you know? They did the whole All My Children, One Life to Live, General Hospital. They had just kind of, that was like a little bit older. And then felt like most young people were really into Days of Our Lives. And I don't know if it was because it was at lunchtime. I think, I'm not sure, that it was like 12:30 to 1:30. But everybody had their own. And nobody was like, if you're an ABC person, you weren't watching NBC, you weren't watching CBS. I remember times I was forced to watch the ABC stuff. I go, just give me Capital. Give me Guiding Light. Not so much Young and the Restless. I don't know why. But one of the things I was thinking about in soaps, and this is a long time ago, it was way before my time watching soaps. But there was this guy named George Reinhold. And he worked with a woman by the name of Jacqueline Courtney, who died 13, 14 years ago. And he had played heartthrob Steve Frame, and Jacqueline played Alice Matthews, and they were on Another World on NBC. And they are considered to be one of the most famous romantic pairings. I don't know if it's Luke and Laura kind of thing. And see, I still know about Luke and Laura, even though I didn't watch ABC, because you just couldn't get it away from Luke and Laura. But they were this hugely popular romantic pairing. And then there was a triangle that included this character, Rachel, who was played by Robin Strasser and later played by Victoria Wyndham. And so they played there for On Another World from like 68 to 75. And then Reinhold and Courtney were fired from Another World because supposedly for storyline. But the thing is that Reinhold never got along with anybody. But they were so popular, ABC said, come on over. And they went to One Life to Live. And they were paired again together for like 3 years. And then he got fired from that one because, again, he never got along with anybody. And so he retired from acting. He did come back for Another World's 25th anniversary show in 1989. And he considered returning in the mid-1990s. But at this time, he was like openly gay. And he said that they didn't want openly gay people to come on the soaps and stuff like that. So he really can't find a job. But in 1997, he placed an ad as an escort in Florida newspaper offering his services to take women to parties or other events. And some of the press implied he was selling himself as an escort in a sexual manner. And I didn't know about him. I didn't know about any of this. But one of the shows that I did watch at the time was Sally Jesse Raphael. And he went on there. And that's how I learned about George Reinhold. Okay. The blind items from today. Number one's from March 1st. There's a bootleg copy of the movie that everyone wants to see, but will probably never see the light of day through regular channels. The person with the bootleg copy is going to upload it to social media, but is waiting to see if the movie gets a platform, and that's Coyote versus Acme. Number two's from March 1st. She managed to get out of the celebrity cult, but now the illiterate celebrity is meeting with old friends who are members. That is a way to get rid of the only cash you have left. That's Priscilla Presley in Scientology. Number three is from March 1st. Yeah, you know you're a narcissist when you tell the world you hired a stylist and brag about who else they style. The illiterate one just needs all the attention on her all the time. That's Meghan Markle, Jamie Mizrahi, and Adele. Number four is from March 1st. This federal 1/100th politician should also know that the hooker who had Epstein around her finger is also talking about the politician and his kinks. That's Robert Menendez and Gwendolyn Beck. And number five is from March 1st. It's pretty easy to tell that whoever wrote the recent lawsuit against the wannabe rapper slash producer reads this website on a pretty regular basis. They even use some of the same clues in their blind items. And that's Rodney Jones and Sean Combs. And that is it for this one, you guys. I will talk to you later.